Reading tonight is from Genesis chapter 40, verses 1 through 4. Genesis 40, 1 through 4. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against the Lord, their king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody.
We're continuing in our study of the life of Joseph. Joseph, if you would, open your Bibles back to Genesis. Joseph is in prison, where we're going to pick him up this week and look at him interpreting some dreams. And each week so far, I've been able to structure our sermon around a topic that begins with the word P. And so last week we talked about priorities. This week we're going to talk about patience. There's a story I read about Albert Einstein. Of course, Albert Einstein, the known genius, but he himself was a graduate student one time and had spent years working upon his PhD in physics. And he turned in his paper and he waited several weeks, his dissertation, and waited a few weeks, and he got it back with a note on it saying it had been rejected. It was too short. And Einstein was dejected from this. He was very discouraged. And he thought, this could take me months, and he just didn't have any patience with it. He was very upset about it. But he went back and he sat down and he reread the entire dissertation. And then he made one addition. Remember, they said it was too short. He made one addition. Not another chapter, but simply one more sentence. He added one sentence. And then he turned it in. They didn't reread it again, I don't guess, and they accepted it this time. The point, I think, that the professor wanted to make was that you're not going to be accepted just the first time. You've got to work a little harder. And so he figured that out, and he added his sentence and turned it in, and this time they accepted it. Now, when you think about that, you think about how he worked at that, most of us probably don't work quite that well, do we? We're not Einsteins at figuring out when we have setbacks, when we have disappointments, when we feel like we're being asked to wait, when we feel like we've got our plan and we want it to go forward, and then all of a sudden someone throws a significant kink in our plan. We can't figure out a solution quite as easy as Einstein did. Well, that's where Joseph is. He's waiting in Egypt. He's waiting. If you think about our timeline here, we can't be precise. But of course, we studied back in chapter 37 that he was 17 at some point when him and his brothers had grown up in the land of Canaan. And we find out later in chapter 41, verse 46, that when he gets released from prison, he is 30. So basically, we have a period there, if you want to give him a year or two after the 17 notation, from him being about 18, 19 years of age to being 30. So basically all of his 20s is going to be spent being a slave in Potiphar's house and being in prison. Now, we don't know for sure how many years should be divided in between those two things. But I don't know about you, but I'm not really signing up for either one of those things. Being a slave, and we know how that turned out, and then being in prison for basically 11 to 13 years. The entire time, he's going to be one of those two. Now, I need to give you some context, and we need to study these chapters. We're not going to take the time to read the entire chapters, but basically you can remember chapters 40 and 41, what we're going to cover tonight, by thinking about four dreams. Four dreams. Joseph is in prison, and of course the end of chapter 39 is that he had become very successful in prison and had arisen to be the keeper of the prison. And now the king of Egypt becomes upset with his cupbearer and his chief baker, and they're put in prison. And verse number 5, one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison. So chapter 40, the two dreams are the cupbearer and the baker. And they have these dreams. In verse number 9, the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. And he said to him, "In my dream there was a vine before me. And on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. And then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph tells him the interpretation. He says, "The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand formally as when you were his cupbearer." So it's a good interpretation. 3 days, you're going to be back to your previous position. You'll be putting the cup back in Pharaoh's hand. And he says this, key to our passage, in patience. Only, verse 14, "Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that should they should put me into the pit, into the dungeon." The chief baker, verse 16 and following, had a dream. And in his dream he had three cake baskets on top of his head. In the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Joseph answered, and he tells him straight, not going to be a favorable interpretation, but Joseph tells him the truth, even though it was not convenient. He tells him, verse 19, "In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you, and he's going to hang you on a tree. The birds will eat the flesh from you." Of course, this happens. On the third day, Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast, and he restored the chief cupbearer, and he had the baker hanged. Now, look at verse 23. "Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." Now look at chapter 1, verse 1 of chapter 41. After 2 whole years, once again, we can't be precise on all the chronology of Joseph's life, but I don't know how many years he had been in prison until this point. But after this point, it's 2 more years. I do know that it's all before the age of 30, so it's somewhere in that 12 to 13-year period that this 2 years is going to be fulfilled. But 2 whole years he stayed in prison. He was not remembered by the cupbearer. Now, Pharaoh is going to have, remember I told you 4 dreams? 2 dreams, chapter 40. 2 dreams, chapter 41. Chapter 41, Pharaoh has a dream. Now, in this dream, the 2 dreams in chapter 41 are going to both be Pharaoh's dreams. One of these dreams is going to be about livestock, and the other dream is going to be about corn or grain. And let's read and notice these dreams. So, verse 2, "There came out of the Nile 7 cows, big fat cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. But 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the attractive or fat cows, plump cows. And Pharaoh woke up." Then he has a dream about the grain. And he dreamed that there were ears of corn or ears of grain, verse number 5. "Plump and good were growing on one stalk. Behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump ears, full of grain. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream." No one else could interpret this dream. So the cupbearer remembered Joseph. He brings Joseph to the attention of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh has this Joseph come up. And in verse number 15, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I've had a dream. There is no one who can interpret it. I've heard it said you can, that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And Joseph says, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." Pharaoh will recount the dreams again to him, In verse number 25, he says, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. Two dreams, one meaning. And most of y'all probably are familiar with the meaning. The meaning is there's going to be 7 years of plenty. There's going to be an abundant harvest. That's why you have this agricultural dream. The cows are going to get really fat. Everybody's going to have plenty. The harvests are going to be abundant, but it's going to be followed by 7 years of famine and drought. This is going to lead down to verse number 33. Pharaoh, he suggests to Pharaoh, Joseph does, that Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land. So Joseph suggested, you got to store up. You got to save up during the years of plenty so that you then can feed your people during the years of famine. This proposal, verse 37, pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. So he's going to set Joseph over this entire matter. He will decree that Joseph will become the second in charge. In fact, he says that no one answers to Joseph except Pharaoh alone. In other words, Pharaoh is the only one above Joseph. Joseph is in charge. Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. And he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. I want to suggest that there are some things that we notice that Joseph was patient in waiting for. He was patient in waiting for. Notice 4 areas that Joseph was patient in waiting for. First of all, he was patient in waiting for God's vindication. Joseph certainly would have wanted vindication. He was wrongly accused by Potiphar's wife, and he certainly would have wanted for vindication. In fact, he says in chapter 40, when he's talking to the cupbearer, that I have done nothing wrong. In verse 15, he was even refers to him being stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and I've done nothing that should put me in this pit. He was wanting vindication. He's wanting God to make it all right, for justice to come. Yet in chapter 40, verse 23, he was forgotten. He was forgotten. It did not come. In fact, notice that the Bible never tells us that Potiphar's wife ever got what she deserved. In fact, the Bible never tells us that Joseph was really acquitted or justified in his right actions before the people. We don't know. We know he is going to arise past that, but the events of dealing with Potiphar's wife and him being wrongly accused never is spoken of again in terms of him being vindicated. It reminds us of Revelation chapter 6, verse 10. When the souls are below the altar in heaven and Christians are being persecuted on earth and they cry out, O sovereign God, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Many times God's people ask, God, how much longer are you going to allow this to go on? It reminds us of the book of Job. And Job crying out, I am suffering unjustly. This is not right. I should not be suffering like this. And he wanted God's vindication. In fact, we think about Romans chapter 12, where the Bible speaks about this same idea, and it's hard to practice. In verse 17 through 19, where the Bible says, repay no one evil for evil. But give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, as far as it depends upon you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. Never avenge yourself, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Joseph was patient with wanting God's vindication. It's hard to pine away days in prison when you were wrongly treated. Vengeance must be one of the hardest things to wait through. But God often asks people to wait when they have been wrongly treated and they are in the right. But many times that does not come out. I read about a story in one of the books I read on Joseph. I don't have it up here, but and the man told about how he had been wrongly accused and was by a couple what he thought to be close friends. And he said that it was an extremely hard time on him, and he went through a period where a couple years there where a lot of people were really disparaging his name and his reputation, and he had a real falling out with these friends. And he said his name was not acquitted until one of the men was finally brought to trial and put in prison, and it all came out. It was had to do with the money issue and some money being stolen and all this, and he wasn't involved in that, but they were all trying to take him down with them, and they were trying to put the blame on him so that they would be off. And he said he wasn't acquitted until finally it all came out by the police finding all the evidence. But he said those years of waiting, those years of patience was hard. We have to be patient for God's vindication. But notice also Joseph illustrates that we have to be patient with a good attitude. Once again, I think Joseph is such a remarkable story because he did not become bitter. He rose to prominence in jail, as we talked about last week at the end of chapter 39. He understood he did nothing that should put him in prison. But he was still caring about others. He still was thoughtful. I think it's interesting that when he sees in chapter 40, verse 7, he asks Pharaoh's officers who were with him and in custody of his master's house, why are your faces so downcast today? He still cared about others and was thoughtful about others. Joseph, even though he could be the victim, one of his attitudes in choosing to be a victor was that he still did not become bitter, but was still focused on helping others. I was reading in this book, talking about caring about others, talking about how we relate to others and caring about others, and he calls it, a study that had been done calls it being responsive to the ones around you. In other words, being aware and responding to others around you. And he talks about how there's three main things that people want as we're around others that we can give in our words we say. And Joseph does this. He says the first is understanding. Understanding. In other words, trying to understand where the other person is coming from. Validation. Trying to validate what they're going through and what they're feeling. And then caring. Caring about what they're dealing with. Think about Nehemiah when he heard about his city of Jerusalem and what it was going through. He had understanding. He cared about it. When you think about Jesus and those three things, when Jesus interacted with people as he saw the lame and the blind, the suffering, he often understood what position they were in. The lepers, for example, he understood what it was like to be a leper. He tried to validate that they were still valuable and they were still worthy and they were people of value and worth, and he cared about them. You know, think about what our life would be like if we tried to give understanding, validation, and care to whoever is in your circle. You know, a part of this is just simple kindness. Simple kindness. That's what Joseph wanted from the cupbearer. He says, remember me. Remember me to show me kindness. Joseph had showed him kindness. He wanted kindness in return. The next thing that we need to be patient with, we need to be patient with waiting for God's vindication, patience, having patience with a good attitude, as Joseph did, but also patient with faith and trust. Joseph did not lose his faith. Through the disappointment, through the lack of seeing God working, through the years passing, he kept his faith. Actually, it could be the case that the prison cell refined Joseph. And if you notice, you're going to find him referring to God abundantly in this passage. Look at chapter 40, verse number 8. He refers to God. And he says, do not interpretations belong to God? In chapter 41, verse 16, when Pharaoh asked him to give the answer, he says, God will give Pharaoh a favorable interpretation. In verse 25, he brought it back to God. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he has done. Verse 28, he refers back to God. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And in verse 32, he refers back to God. This thing is fixed by God, and God will surely bring it about. Joseph said, I'm not doing this on my own. This is God. God's doing this. When you go through difficult times, or when you're asked to be patient, don't lose your faith. Don't lose your faith. Actually, it may be, as I said, that the prison cell actually helped him grow in his faith. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Russian author, spent 8 years in a hard Siberian prison or camp. And in one of his books, he wrote this, talking about learning about God. He went in not a believer in things in God and not understanding good and evil necessarily in the world. And he was writing about good and evil. And he wrote this. He said, I learned about good and evil and how it refined in my own life and heart. And he said, bless you, prison, for having been in my life. He said, if it wasn't for the prison, I would not know about God. I wouldn't understand these things about good and evil. And he says, bless prison for having been in my life. Now, I don't know for sure, but it could be the case. When you think about that 17, 18-year-old boy who was saying, hey, brothers, you're going to bow down to me. And he was pretty arrogant. Look at my coat. And now you think about the 30-year-old man who comes out of prison, who when the Pharaoh says, I'm looking for a man, he doesn't stand up and say, hey, I'm your man. He allows Pharaoh to select him. He says, you need to get a man to do this job. And then when Pharaoh says, well, I think I found the man, it's going to be you, then Joseph accepts. He's a humble man. He kept his faith, and each time he pointed to God as the one who was revealing it. And then his patience was waiting for his reward. He maintained his self-control. He didn't push himself into the promotion, as I was just speaking of in chapter 41, 33 through 41. And I think that's significant because God will often reward us in his own time. God will reward us in his own time. If you turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, which deals with patience a lot, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20, the Bible says, for what credit is it if when you sin you are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure. This is a gracious thing in the sight of God. If we endure, if we're patient, then God shows us that he will eventually reward us. In fact, later on or earlier in chapter 1 of this same book, verses 7 through 9, he talks about us being patient in verse 7 as we've been tested by fire. And then verse 9 he says, we obtain the end or the outcome of our faith, the salvation of our souls. Heaven is ultimately a marathon, isn't it? It's about us being patient to the end. Through all the trials of life, the ups and downs of life, being patient till we receive the outcome of our faith, the salvation of our souls. You can make a metaphor, an analogy, with Joseph spending years in prison and then eventually being rewarded by his patience, that we are rewarded by God for our patience, and ultimately that reward comes in heaven. Now those are some lessons from Joseph, but let me make a couple more lessons for us. just lessons for us while we wait in life. Two lessons while we wait in life based on this story here too. Number one, God knows the purpose of why we're waiting. Steve Farrar tells the story about Rocky, who was an Alaskan guide and outfitter for 30 years, and he had all kind. He wrote a book called Wild Men, Wild Alaska. And in this book, he tells the stories of a lot of these hunting journeys and some of the adventures he's gotten into, from huge trophy animals to some of the plane crashes and different trials they've had. But in this situation, he tells the story about when he had had some men out hunting in a very remote area. They had flown into this area, and they had killed a large moose. And they had to go back and fly back out, and these men were getting this animal prepared, and they were going to spend the night there, and then the next day they were going to fly in. Rocky was going to fly back in with the airplane pilot and pick them up. And so he leaves a couple of these men back there. Ron, Jared, and John would be on their own without communication or supplies to the next day. Well, the problem is, they didn't know this at the time, but this happened on 9/10/2001, September 10, 2001. And of course, on the morning of September the 11th is when the terrorist attacks were carried out on America, which, if you remember, grounded all flying in the U.S. No private planes, no planes at all. And of course, you don't think about it, but in Alaska, that meant a tremendous significance. And these guys at this time, they did not have communication. So they're going to be out there alone waiting for them to come, and he just doesn't come. Flies doesn't come. And so back at the lodge, Rocky called their families. He let them know that the men had ample provisions, that they would fly in and get to them as soon as they could legally do it. And finally, he was able to send the pilot in on September the 13th to get the weary hunters. When the plane landed, one of the hunters vented his anger and frustration. He says, "Where have you been? What have y'all been doing? Why'd y'all leave us out here for several days? We could have lost our lives." And notice the situation. One of the hunters later wrote, "I will never forget landing on the dirt runway behind the lodge and taxiing up the lodge and seeing Rocky there. And I got out of the phone, embraced you, and felt tremendous relief that we were okay." And then they explained the events of what had been going on in our country. He told me it was the first time since the beginning of the airplane flight in America that all flights had been halted nationwide. And I will always remember the next word he spoke to me. He looked up in the sky and said, "Ron, God is in control, not me. We may not understand these events, but God sees the past, present, and future. He's in charge. We must trust Him." Now, when you think about that scenario, and you think about being those hunters and being stranded in the Alaskan wilderness, did they know why they were being stranded? Did they know the purpose of why they were being left? Did they know why they were having to wait multiple days in what seemed like a precarious situation? They didn't know, did they? They didn't know. They didn't understand anything about 9/11. They didn't understand anything about all the airplane flights being grounded. They didn't understand the reason or the purpose for why they were waiting. But Rocky and the larger group of people, the people who were looking after them and their families, they all understood. I think that's a pretty good illustration, as it was used in the book, and I think it's a pretty good illustration for us to think about. Many times in life, we're like those hunters. We're out there, and we feel often abandoned. And we wonder, God, what's the reason? What's the purpose? And sometimes it's not to, in our life, maybe months, maybe years later, that we understand the reason or the purpose of why we had to wait. And so we may not understand the reason or the why we're waiting. Have you ever noticed that whenever you come up on an accident on the interstate or some kind of stopping of traffic, what does everybody want to know? Why? Why are we stopped? We all won't start pulling over, getting out. Nowadays, we just get on our phones and look and say, what's the cause of the problem here? You're in a doctor's office. You're waiting. What do you try to figure out? If it gets longer than normal, what? Why? Why are we waiting? If you're in a restaurant and it's taking undue time to get your food, you may ask, what's the holdup? What's the problem? There is power in knowledge. The first question we always ask when we're waiting is, why? And if we often receive a good answer, if someone says, I'm sorry, but it's taking a little longer to get the fish done, we want to make sure it's done, so we'll bring it out as soon as it's done. Then we kind of understand, all right, I understand what's going on. In life, many times, God does not give us the answer. He simply says, trust. He simply says, wait. And so we need to remember Proverbs 3, 5 through 7. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not upon your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. And the second thing that I want to note for us as we wait is that God shapes us through the waiting. God shapes us through the waiting. God molds us when we wait. He shaped Joseph's character and his faith. He also trained him. You remember what Joseph did when he was in Potiphar's house? He rose to be significant in managing Potiphar's house. What did he do when he was in the prison? He rose to manage the entire prison. He's being trained to manage the entire country. You see, he may not have made a good manager if he hadn't been trained in two other situations. He also may not have made a good manager of the entire country if he had not have been humbled through the time in slavery and in prison. God shaped him through his experiences. I think about Romans chapter 5. Paul says this in verses 2 through 5. Paul certainly had to be a patient man, and he went through a lot of things. And he says this in verse 2. Through him we have also obtained access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and we rejoice in hope of the glory of God. More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that sufferings produce endurance. So suffering produces patience, endurance. And endurance, patience, produces character. So it refines us, it tests us, it purifies us. It builds our character, and character produces hope. So it's through our character being refined, it's through our own lives being refined, that we have greater hope. And I think Joseph developed his hope just like Paul developed his hope through patience. Through patience. And so our prayer life is tested when we go through difficult times. Our character is developed, and our hope is challenged and refined, and we see what true hope is. I want to close by looking at Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations chapter 3. Look at verse 23 through 26. When you think about patience, you think about Joseph, chapter 3, verse 23 through 26. Wonderful expression of patience here. Verse 22. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. For the Lord is good to those who wait for him. To the soul who seeks him, it is good that one should wait quietly. It's tough to do, isn't it? Wait quietly. It's hard for us to do when we're in small situations like the doctor's office or in the traffic line or something like that. But he says it's good for us to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord, to be patient. Joseph waited 11 years, maybe 12. Moses waited 40 years in the wilderness before being ready. Paul's going to wait, but when it comes their time, they were ready. Be patient. God knows the purpose. Trust and realize that God is working on you through that time period. This evening, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, we can help you in any way. Come as together we stand and as we sing.
All to Jesus I surrender.